This podcast is a Mirror Digital production.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Welcome back to the Mirror Football Podcast, the weekly football debate that's got all the bonhomie of West Ham's end-of-season dinner. Too tired to sign autographs, but lively enough to talk football with you today are the Daily Mirror's chief sports writer, Oliver Holt.
Hello, mate.
London football correspondent, John Cross.
Hello.
And a mirrorfootball.co.uk editor, Dan Silver.
Hello.
As we wrap up the end of the Premier League season and we play another round of Rothman's Roulette. Later on, we'll be talking situations vacant at West Ham and probably at Chelsea. We'll be asking who Liverpool and Tottenham could buy to squeeze Arsenal out of the Champions League places next season, and we'll take a last look at the five-team relegation shake-up. But first, Manchester United will pick up their 12th Premier League title on Sunday, and I believe, though it's barely been mentioned, that it's their 19th title overall. Oliver Holt, what have been the defining moments of that United triumph, and what have been the defining moments of the whole season for you?
Well, two moments stand out for me in United's triumph, both of which I went to, which helps, I suppose, in terms of making them stand out. But both away games, both games in which they came from behind, which has become a Manchester United speciality over the years in terms of their refusal to give in and to accept defeat. The first was at Blackpool when they went two goals down in the first half and looked as though that was when they were still unbeaten, but people were still saying, damning them really with faint praise. Ryan Giggs came on at half-time in that match and turned the game, which again is another thing that's been typical of their season. Giggs has had another fantastic season, defied his age. They won that game 3-2. Hernandez scored the winner, if I remember rightly. You know, again, something that's been crucial to their season, Hernandez's goals. The second game, which I think Sir Alex Ferguson has pinpointed as one of the turning points too, was the away victory at West Ham when they were 2-0 down at half time, quite late on in the season. Arsenal were playing Blackburn, I think later that, an evening kickoff on the Saturday, and could have closed the gap right up. But United again came from 2-0 down, 1-4-2 was the game when Rooney swore into the camera, and it was a pivotal game. Arsenal got a draw, did they, later on? And to me, that was when I thought that was the day the title was won.
And it just typifies the way that they roll on and on, doesn't it? You mentioned Ryan Giggs there, who has had a fantastic season. Gary Neville popped up earlier in the week to say that he thought Paul Scholes should play on another season. What do you think of that, John? Do you think he should go now, or do you think he should come back as a bit part player again?
No, I think he should go now. I think he has been a fantastic player down the years. I mean, I think you know, when you hear about all the other players in the world sort of, you know, spelling out just what a great talent he was, what a great passer of the ball he was. You get sort of, you know, basically tributes from Thierry Henry, from Xavi, from Zidane. You know, you begin to understand the quality of Paul Scholes. And I think in recent years, it's almost like, yes, he could do a job, but you'd have to redefine Paul Scholes in a way. And I think in a way it's slightly tarnishing the wonderful memory. I think some of his tackling, you know, it's been almost a bit of a side issue with Paul Scholes, but I think some of his tackling is so frustrating. But it comes out of slightly frustrating circumstances now, because he can't cover the same ground as he used to, and I think sometimes he dives in, and I hope that Paul Scholes, you know, is remembered for the legend that he is rather than anything else. So I think to that end he perhaps should call it a day.
Would you like him to just give up, or would you like him to go and have a season at Oldham and kind of live out his schoolboy fantasy?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be nice. I'm sure we will come into sort of, you know, sort of replacements sort of later. But, I mean, I just feel that United, if there's one area that can be strengthened apart from sort of goalkeeper, it would be the midfield area, you know. And I think, you know, Modric, you know, if he were to come in, and I think that, you know, in place of Scholes, for example, that would just be fantastic. United's midfield would be amazing.
Absolutely, you know, and that's this has been the kind of the knock on United all season, and the knock on the season as a whole. I mean, it hasn't really been a vintage season, hasn't it? It's been an exciting season at the top, really exciting at the bottom. But in terms of quality, this is not the best United team we've ever seen, is it, Ollie?
No, not at all. I mean, I think United were average for the first two-thirds of the season. I mean, admittedly, they went unbeaten for a long period of that, but they weren't really firing people's imaginations as their great sides of the past have done. But I think the last third of the season, they've been absolutely fantastic. Mm. I mean, some of their performances... Their performance, I know it's not a league performance, but their performance against Schalke, I thought in Gelsenkirchen was one of the best performances I've seen. Now, subsequent to that, everybody said, yeah, well, Schalke are a very poor team. But nobody was saying that. Nobody was saying that before they played them. And that was symptomatic, that, I think, of the fact that United, when they had to, United have just accelerated away from the rest of them.
Once and, again, they got the job done, and yeah.
Well, they did.
And,
yeah.
finished strong, as they always do.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with the other two lads about Scholes. I mean, I consider it a privilege seeing Scholes every time I see him play. And, you know, I know, obviously, he's slowing down, and John's right, you know, he's not entirely the player he was, but I think he's still good enough to do a job in the way that maybe, you know, 15 games a season, play fewer games. I still think he could be a massive influence on people coming through. I mean, one of the things, when we talk about the Manchester United midfield and maybe replacements and things, you know, totally, I think the one player that if United could get who would make a massive difference to them is Luka Modric. I agree. I don't know whether that will happen, whether Tottenham would release him, but I just think he would make that side a great side again, I think. But we also have to remember that people like Tom Cleverley's coming back, you know, and I think somebody like, if Scholes is around to mentor someone like Tom Cleverley, I think that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that United have got a really good supporting cast now, haven't they? We probably do lack a real impact midfielder in the way that Modric would be, but they've also got kids like Ravel Morrison, who's extremely promising, coming through. I think, you know, they're probably going to win the Youth Cup again, aren't they? Having been held 2-2 by Sheffield United.
You know, I do think the genius of Ferguson this season, really, and I think this almost makes it his best ever title success, is because he's won the championship almost in a year of transition.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
It's coming towards the end of Scholes, it's coming towards the end of Giggs, end of Van der Sar. It's obvious that the team needs strengthening midfield, perhaps a little bit, you know, and perhaps, you know, up front as well, maybe he needs to shake up the strikers. Yeah, he's kept the squad together, he's kept them winning, and, you know, as Ollie rightly says, I think the best performance they've produced this season is Schalke away, and which just says everything you need to know about Man United. They still play with flair, they created countless chances, and they were absolutely magnificent. Now Ferguson has this opportunity to go again this summer, to buy, to build, to improve, and they'll only get better.
I mean, Ollie, you've probably seen United more than anyone in this room this season. I think the interesting thing for me is their away form, certainly in the league. I think they've won 5, drawn 10, lost 4. I mean, Blackpool have won 5 games away from home this season. Obviously, the home form has crossed the line for them. But is this was that a failing of Ferguson this season? Is this a weakness that the competitors can exploit next season, or is it just a blip?
Well, maybe, Dan. I mean, I tend to agree with John, really. Rather than look for weaknesses in Ferguson this year, I think it's actually been a year that's proved his strengths. And I take your point about the away form, it's been poor, but again, maybe the fact that they've been able to overcome that. And I think, you know, he's managed this transition that John's talking about. I mean, not only has he managed that transition, he's done it without very much money. I had a look at the figures this week, actually, on net spend in the Premier League over the last 8 years, and United are 8th. You know, the teams that you would expect to have spent the most, Man City and Chelsea, over the last 8 years. Arsenal are about 18th, but United
that high.
yeah, United are eighth. You know, their net spend every season over those 8-9 years has been £5 million, and that, I mean, it's an unbelievable achievement really from Ferguson, because the reality over the last 2 or 3 years, for whatever reason, whether it's Ferguson not wanting to spend or the Glazers not wanting to release any money, is that they haven't had the money to replace Ronaldo or Tevez, and I think that's an astonishing job that Ferguson's done this season.
At the end of every season, we sit down here and we make a case for why only the champions can win the league next season, and then it usually turns out that we're all wrong, Dan. But I mean, this season it seems to me that whoever they bring in, City would have trouble blending in new players as they had at the start of this season. It seems like Chelsea are going to sack the manager. There's going to have to be changes there. They're going to start slowly. Arsenal, we know, aren't going to buy people. Tottenham may lose their key players. Liverpool not ready yet. Can you see beyond United? I mean, I struggle to see beyond United winning this for the next 2 or 3 seasons, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, yes and no. Obviously, I think United will strengthen in the summer. We talked about Modric, maybe Schneider as well would be a possible midfield acquisition. But as we've said, they do have to cope with you know, Van der Sar going, with Giggs and Scholes possibly on the way in or on the way out. And you know, I think there will be some strong challenges next season. I think Liverpool have got their act together, and I think you can see the club looks reborn, and the way they took Fulham apart the other week was I think a real taster of things to come. And with some canny acquisitions in the summer, I think they can be a contenders again. And Chelsea, well, you know, whoever comes in to replace Ancelotti has got the building blocks to make a decent team, and I'm sure Roman will get his wallet out again in the summer. I think there will be contenders. City, I think, will also, they'll get it together. You know, there's a nucleus of a team there now that can challenge, and with the income from the Champions League again, they're going to go out and strengthen. And I don't think it's as cut and dried as that.
There's certainly a winning mentality at City now. Whether that can survive, you know, if Tevez goes, I think that's a major blow for them, isn't it? Whoever they bring in. Dan mentions Liverpool there. How far do you think they're away, Ollie?
Well, I think not far, but I think that talk of them winning the title next season is
premature at the moment.
Premature the best, yeah. And wildly optimistic from Liverpool fans. And my guess would be that Kenny Dalglish would agree with that. But I mean, I think he has made massive strides at that club, and I've got nothing but respect for the job he's done. I mean, I think there's a case for him being manager of the season for the job that he's done there in the time that he's been there, the transformation that he's wrought. But I think they're still a way away, and I think you know, people are talking about Ashley Young maybe going there, Charles Nzogbia another one, but I mean, I think they need to strengthen quite a lot, and I think they need to do everything they can to provide service for Andy Carroll, because I think it's very, very important that they make that work. And I'm not, you know, I know he's not really been fully fit since he's joined, but I think the jury's still out on the wisdom of that signing, whether he can carry the team, but whether he can be such a good spearhead that he will propel them into the top four. And I think they will make top four next season. I think my guess now at this moment where they will finish next season would be fourth. And I think, to me, top two will be Man United and Man City, and not necessarily in that order. I think that they'll fight it out. And I don't know. Again, we hear rumours and gossip in our business, but I mean, I've heard several people who have either seen or have spoken to people who have seen this acquisition list that Manchester City have.
The famous Noel Gallagher, blow your brains out acquisition
list.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if they come good on any of these acquisitions, then, you know, they've got a team that's bedded in a little bit now. I think they'll be right in the shake-up for the title next season.
Do you think they need to resist the temptation to make wholesale changes again and just bring in one or two quality players?
Yeah, I'd say two or three quality players, absolutely. And Look, the thing is with City now, when you're talking quality, I mean, we're talking serious quality, presumably. You know what I mean? As Steve says, the kind of acquisitions that will make you fall off your chair. So yes, if they get a couple of those, then I think they've got a side who can challenge.
John, if we're saying that the top two are going to be United and City, not necessarily in that order, and we're assuming that Chelsea throw some money at it this season, who is going to drop out for you then? Well, there's only Arsenal to drop out, but rather, do you see Spurs coming into it? Do you see Liverpool coming into it? Do you see Arsenal fading away? I mean, you know, for me, Arsenal have had this season, started this season with the fifth best squad and have managed to come either third or fourth, and it's almost a season of overachievement, even though it's a season of disappointment. What do you think? Spurs going upwards, Spurs going down, Arsenal going up, Arsenal going down?
I still think that Arsenal will maintain top four finish. I think it's going to be harder to win the league next season. I think that this season was almost open season for who wanted it the most, really, but United's kind of consistency and experience shone through in the end. But I do think that Arsenal's really interesting what they do this summer, I think, and that will define Arsenal's next season, because I think that they're obviously very hopeful of keeping Nasri. That's important. I've absolutely no doubt that there will be the predictable, you know, Fabregas battle with Barcelona. The club seem quite confident that it'll keep him. It'll be interesting to see how they do that. I don't think there'll be any superstar signings. I think there'll be one or two signings that will steady the ship. A good solid centre-half is what's required more than anything else. And then an absolute raft of young players coming in, but young players to boost the ranks. And will that be enough to win the title? I'm not so sure, but it should. I think Arsene Wenger will have been left in no doubt this season that it's not all about the Champions League top four places. It's about getting some silverware on the table, and I do think that more than ever next season, a trophy is so important for Arsene Wenger in the future.
I think that's right. I must direct people here, if they've not read it already, to John's column this week on the website. It's mirrorfootball.co.uk/cross. You can read it there, and that kind of outlines this scenario in which he will continue to do what he's been doing for years and years, and he firmly believes that they're one season away. And that's the idea of them bringing in Scott Parker, Cahill, Sarko, Benzema is fanciful, and instead they'll do that. Dan, do you think is that going to be enough for them? Could this be the end of Arsene Wenger next season?
I mean, you know, football fans are a funny breed. There's many of us that would love to have the problems that Arsenal fans consider their club to have. Finishing, you know, in and around the top four. Yes, you haven't had a trophy for 6 years, but some of us have been waiting for 30 years for even
that's the price you pay for raising expectations.
Absolutely.
You know, that is the difficulty facing Arsene Wenger, because he's the best and most successful manager in the club's history.
Absolutely.
And now forevermore Arsenal fans think he should be winning the title or the double or the treble.
But there's only one team that can win the title every season, and you know, as crass and obvious as it sounds to say it, and you know, there's absolutely no reason why that should be Arsenal. And the fact that, you know, Arsenal fans have been watching some fantastic football should be reward enough, but obviously, you know, that thirst for success is not being stated, and you know, I think it would be madness to get rid of Arsene Wenger from an outsider's point of view, but it seems to me that the groundswell is turning against him.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it would be crazy. I'd just like to see a little bit more of a change in his philosophy a bit. I think he's, you know, I still think the majority are with him, but they'd just like to see him sign a little bit more proven experience. Listen, I think he'll sign one of those centre-halves, but, you know, he must sign a powerful centre-half to lead the team. But I do think it's building on his youthful reserves and trying to stick with the project, if you like, with a realisation there that, you know, some of these kids are not going to be quite good enough. Yeah. Some of the squad players need clearing out, but there's going to be some lots of new signings, but I think the emphasis on youth, you know, rather than
I also think that some of those names you mentioned, Cahill, Benzema, I do think it's important for Arsenal fans this summer to have a signing. And again, I know this goes against Wenger's philosophy to an extent, but have a signing that fires the imagination a little bit, something like Benzema, just somebody with a bit more experience, proven quality, somebody Benzema would have a little bit to prove, not being a massive success at Real, you know, being a reasonable success but not massive. I think somebody like that would be a great, you know, a great fillip really for the club and for the fans.
I'm in a slightly unusual position here. I'm here with a Stockport County fan. We know how that's turned out. And we're with a West Ham fan and with an Arsenal fan. And I'm in a rare position as a Manchester City supporter of actually feeling quite good at the end of a season. Let's talk about West Ham now. I mean, Dan, you've suffered through this season. Mm. Who is to blame? Whose dabs are all over this? Is it David Sullivan in the boardroom with the Martin O'Neill unsigned contract? Is it Avram with his feet up in the manager's office? Who do you blame? Is Karen Brady and the Olympic Stadium thing, has that taken their focus off running the club properly?
It's tempting to say everybody apart from Scott Parker. But, I mean, there's kind of three main groups, I think, that are culpable. Obviously, there's the manager, there's the players, and there's the three stooges stinking up the boardroom. I mean, Avram was almost certainly the wrong man in the wrong job at the wrong time. I'm not quite sure what his job should be, but it's certainly not managing a football club. And last year, the club, West Ham, survived more or less by default. You know, we had 35 points, and the fact was there were three teams that were even worse than that. This year, we might finish on 36 and we'll still be bottom. You know, the rest of the cannon fodder in the Premier League was better, but to try and change that situation, I'd say bringing in the man who managed the worst team in the division last year probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. You know, Avram has the air of a loser about him. You know, he finished bottom with Portsmouth. He lost the Champions League final with Chelsea. He lost the League Cup final with Chelsea. You know, he's not an inspiring winner. So I don't know whether, you know, he was cheap and he was available and he said he'd do the job with a small transfer budget, and that was clearly good enough for Sullivan, Gold and Brady, but he wasn't the man for the job. But having said that, I mean, the players have to be culpable as well. You know, apart from Scott Parker, possibly Rob Green, who I think recovered from his England nightmare pretty well and kind of earned a lot of points this season. Mark Noble, Thomas Hitzlsperger, possibly James Tompkins and Denver Bard lobbying there as well. The rest of them have barely put a shift in all season. And again, some of that has to go to the manager. But if you look at West Ham's results over the season, they've barely been able to concentrate for the full 90 minutes. I mean, we talk about the Man United game earlier as a turning point for United. It was certainly a turning point for West Ham as well. We were coming off the back of some good results. We were 2-0 up, and then we let in four goals in 20 minutes. And I don't care if you're playing Man United, Barcelona or Rotherham, you don't let in four goals in 20 minutes. And that was symptomatic of our season, and it carried through right till last Sunday's kind of denouement when we were 2-0 up against Wigan and then let in three goals in the second half. Whether it was confidence or mental preparation, the team just couldn't compete or concentrate. And then, of course, you get to Sullivan, Gold and Brady. But, you know, there's not much to be said that hasn't been said about them, least of all by themselves. Their constant thirst for PR and publicity, I think, has done the team no end of damage all season. And I only hope that now we're out of the Premier League spotlight, some of the spotlight will go away from them as well, and the club will be allowed to kind of rebuild outside of the back pages of the newspapers. You know, watching The Apprentice the other night, Karen Brady on there, you know, she's criticising these young guys for being naive. I said it was nowhere near as naive as the way she handled Avram Grant in January. You know, she needed to get out the papers, get off the TV and start rebuilding the club.
Ollie, do you feel sorry for Avram Grant?
Not really, actually, no, because I think he's culpable too. I mean, I don't think he had he was the wrong man. I don't mean that he, you know, obviously if they offer him the job, he's going to take it. But I don't really feel sorry for him. He did his best, I'm sure, but his best wasn't nearly good enough. I mean, I don't think he's been pilloried any more than he deserves to be. It hasn't got personal or anything. I think people have just said the guy's not good enough. And the only place I feel sorry for him is that most of us know that approaches were made to at least one other manager in January, and that probably didn't do an awful lot for his confidence or for his standing among the players. But apart from that, I think, you know, he was given tools to do the job at West Ham and couldn't do it. And I also think that if another manager, I think a lot of managers could have kept West Ham up this season.
Yeah, I mean, once O'Neill's gone away in January, just the idea of, I mean, Allardyce clearly is going to, you might not like the football, yeah, but he's going to come in and keep you up, right? Yeah.
And I just find that laughable, though. I mean, you know, we're having this debate and Dan will probably bump my head off at this point. But I just think, you know, when Allardyce was floated after O'Neill fell through, you had West Ham fans queuing up to say he doesn't get it, you know, he doesn't understand the academy and the way that it's played at Upton Park. Well, do me a favour. Would you want him now? Of course you would.
Well, yeah.
You know, and any manager sort of coming in and, you know, would have had to have tweaked it at that stage and then get the club in the Premier League, stabilise the club and then develop the way he wanted to play in the longer term and meet the supporters'
demands.
In
the same way that Kerbs did when he was the manager of West Ham.
Well, yeah, but come on, Kerbs did a good job. Kerbs did,
kept
him up. And yet Kerbs is kind of, he's not exactly revered there for the job that he's done.
Exactly.
But I mean, it's
Arsenal fans earlier, I'd have to criticise West Ham fans. We want our cake and we want to eat it. We want it to look beautiful. And, you know, Kerbs, as you said, was handed out for being boring, but there's not a West Ham fan in the land that wouldn't give a boring ninth, tenth place finish this season. Yeah. You know, we want everything, and again, we have to cut our cloth a bit more realistically as well. But, you know, I do think
that will come with the appointment of the next manager, because I do think sometimes there's still this arrogance around West Ham that thinks we're still a big Premier League club. We're not. You're in the Championship, and sometimes you have to cut your cloth accordingly and get a manager who's got proven Championship record, and that doesn't necessarily mean a big name, but someone who will rebuild the club, getting back in the Premier League.
So just a name from each of you, who should get the job?
Well, who should get it? I mean,
who will be cheap enough
to get
it? Well,
my favourite to get it at the moment would be Dave Jones.
Dave Jones, who's a friend of Sullivan's, obviously. John?
Chris Hughton. I just think he'll galvanised the dressing room, has that track record as well.
And Dan?
What we need, I think, is the new Alan Pardew, who kind of came in last time we were in the Championship, and he was young, he was hungry, he didn't have much baggage, and he really tried to change the mentality of the club and the character of the club, and he rebuilt, and that's exactly what we need. As to who could do that job, I'd love Paul Lambert, but obviously he's on a much better horse at the moment with Norwich. For me, Chris Hughton, possibly Malky Mackay as an outsider.
The other relegation places have got to be decided, obviously, on Sunday, and I've felt all season that Blackpool are like this version of the film, football version of the film Tin Cup. You know, the great scene at the end, this kind of Van der Velde inspired scene where to win the Championship, all he has to do is lay up. And really, all Ian Holloway had to do, right, to stay in the Premier League is just start defending at around January and maybe try and get some draws. Do we feel that Blackburn are doomed, Ollie?
Blackpool,
I'm sorry.
I don't think they're doomed, but it's an incredibly difficult one to call, their game against Manchester United. I mean, they don't necessarily have to win it, do they? They just have to lose by less than some. But it's very hard to call it, because obviously there are all sorts of issues about United playing a so-called weakened team. I mean, United played a weakened team in the Champions League semi-final second leg. So how do you define a United weakened team is one of the issues around it. You'd still have to say that a United, what we would think of as a United second team, should be good enough to beat Blackpool at Old Trafford. But, you know, Blackpool are absolutely, you know, it's all or nothing for them. So I don't think they're doomed, but I think they are probably the most likely to go down.
I think the one result where I think you can predict is Birmingham to lose at Spurs.
At Tottenham, yeah.
And then that opens the door for the others to escape.
I think Wigan might win at Stoke as well.
Yeah. And I think suddenly, you know, it's just who can take advantage. That's the thing. And I think that's right. I think Stoke are in meltdown a little bit after the
Stoke season's
great.
They're going to finish on a sort of, you know, their season ended with the City with the cup final.
The minute Toure scored, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Dan, who do you think is going to go down with West Ham?
I'm going for Birmingham and Blackpool. I just think Wolves and Blackburn will kind of play out their Angelus after you, Claude, and get the points they need. And I can't see Man United going easy enough on Blackpool that they get anything that they need. And I think, as I say, Spurs will beat Birmingham. So yeah, they're the two for me.
I think for me, Blackpool, Hart has ruled head a lot this season with Blackpool, and I. Even when they've been in this free-fall, I keep thinking they're going to get out of it because I want them...
Yeah.
Brutally, I want them to get out of it because I like Holloway. I think he's brilliant from a press point of view. I love the football they played in the first half of the season. You know, they played some great stuff and he really went for it, Holloway, and I really admire that. But I think their head tells you that this has been coming for a while and that it's going to be... It's a hell of a difficult one for them to get out of this weekend.
One more item remaining then, and that's to play our Name the Team game, Rothman's Roulette. Dan, you'll be sitting this out today. Oliver Holt and John Cross will be competing. But first, we'll have a recap of the rules. The rules of Rothman's Roulette. 1. We flick through an old copy of Rothman's and give our panellists the details of a famous match from football history. We're looking for them to name as many starting players as they can from one of the competing teams on that day. 2. The panellists bid on how many players they can name. They can either choose to outbid their opponent or tell him to name his players. 3. If the panellist gets all his names right, he gets 1 point. If he gets just one name wrong, his opponent gets a point. 4. There are 3 rounds in each Rothman's Roulette, and the first to 2 points wins.
You're the Daily Mirror, aren't you? Can't you stop them?
You're playing Rothman's Roulette.
So the first game today was played in the Premier League on April the 10th, 1993. Manchester United beat Sheffield Wednesday 2-1 to virtually seal their first title since 1967. Fergie and Brian Kidd ended up on the pitch, but Oliver Holt, how many of United's starting lineup that day can you name? The starting lineup only.
7.
John? More than 7? Or do you want Ollie to name 7?
No, I want Ollie to name 7.
Okay.
Sorry.
So one wrong, and then the point goes to John.
Pallister, Bruce, Irwin.
3.
Paul Parker.
4. Obscure, but 4.
Mark Hughes.
5, that's 5.
Ince.
Is 6. One more.
Kanchelskis.
Oh, Fiesner wasn't in there, and the point goes to John Cross. And the team was.
I would have said
you
Jan
could have had Peter
myself.
Schmeichel. You could have had Lee Sharp. You could have had Eric Cantona. Ince, you said Brian McLaren, Giggs. Okay, John, to win then. The Premier League, 11th of May 2003, Birmingham City 2, West Ham United 2. The last time West Ham were relegated from the Premier League. John Cross, how many of the West Ham starting lineup that day can you name?
I'll go 6.
Going 6. Ollie, any advance on 6?
No.
No. For the win, John Cross.
Jermaine Defoe.
Is 1.
Joe Cole.
Is 2.
Michael Carrick.
It's a point to Oliver Holt. Oh. Michael Carrick was not among them. So the lineup was the guilty men were David James, Repka, Daly, Rufus Brevitt, Glenn Johnson, Trevor Sinclair, Steve Lomas, Joe Cole, Defoe, Les Ferdinand and Canute.
And so Carrick left by then?
And Carrick
no,
was injured.
Was
injured. So it goes down to the tiebreaker and this is much more simple. And Ollie, it's you to go first. The 2nd of November 1994, with Gary Walsh in goal, Manchester United are beaten 4-0 in the Nou Camp by Barcelona. But who scored the goals for Barcelona? There are 3 scorers.
Well, only 1, actually, with certainty.
John, can you do 2?
I reckon I could do 2.
So if you can do 2, then you win.
OK, Stoichkov and Rivaldo.
it's Oliver Holt wins, Stoichkov 2, Romario.
Romario.
And future Chelsea legend Albert Ferrer. So John Cross is the bold loser. Oliver Holt is today's winner. Thank you very much all for contributing to another edition of the Mirror Football Podcast. We're back here next Friday. We'll be talking the Champions League and the playoffs and the transfer window with Darren Lewis and Martin Lipton. Thanks for listening.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Thank you for downloading this podcast, a Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football Podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.